Nobody really want fuego. Masayo will bring fire downwards in Waco. Buy you some coffee and Lego, your egos, your sandwich with mayo and two slices of mayo. Sitting at home on the couch playing Halo, but the Masayo ain't playing no wagos. Games, women and pants gonna get it. Flames, brothers keeping no commandments. Same, calling our armies a favor. Event with your NATO and soldiers with Dracos. Just tell me, how can you stop a tornado or better yet the lava from the volcano? They really can't, bro. They have to pay, bro. The most I say so. So in chase they go for all the wicked atrocities they owe. For all their wicked atrocities they owe. From San Diego to Trinity Tobago, I'm spitting these words so all Israelites they know. Keeping commandments the only way we grow, so we can defeat the nation Galileo. Nation Galileo, get it, cause they pale. He's bringing them hell for every bill of sale. So family, just examine yourself. When that fuego come, you don't wanna get left. Forsake your sin so you complete the test. Then you can have complete rest from all your stress. Fight to do right to your very last breath, or stay wicked and receive second death. Destruction of enemies is muy bueno. Make sure that's one of the things that you pray for. Into the kingdom, the sinners, they can't go. The sinners can't go. So we say, hasta luego. Brothers really don't want fuego. Sisters really don't want fuego. Nobody really want fuego. From the one that's super dead. Fuegos really don't want fuego. Turn it. Fuegos really don't want fuego. Turn it. Nobody really want fuego. Hey, from the one that's super dead. Fuego. 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 Brother, you don't want that fuego. Hey. Fuego. Fuego. Shalom, shalom. Welcome to the Power Hour, Native Latin and Black Biblical Topics. I'm Captain Yahshua.
Hey, shalom. Happy Sabbath, Captain Amariah.
Shalom, Soldier Zerubbabel.
Hey, is it your first show, Soldier Zerubbabel?
Yes, sir.
Are you nervous?
A little bit. I'll be all right.
See, I told you he was nervous.
We got a first timer. We got a first timer.
We should have like a first timer bell or something.
Yeah, something like that, right? Hey. But let's not just sneak past something that just happened, all right? The game was strong today, all right? The fatal game was strong today.
Oh. You know? I'm ready for the DJ table.
I was proud.
I tried to get into DJing back in the day.
Yeah?
Oh, yeah. It wasn't like all digital like it is now. It was like real turntables and stuff like that.
You know, you're just making my calls even that much more greater when I talk about the breakdancing and everything else.
Oh, I did, bro. I knew this Edomite because, Israel, Spanish people and black people in the hood didn't have money. But I knew this white dude that lived like, I guess it would be, you would consider the suburbs of the Bronx. Like if you walked far enough away from the projects, you got to where there were houses and stuff like that.
He was in Sobro?
No, I wasn't Sobro. But I used to go hang out down there because I had like this one Hispanic friend who now with my understanding, I know he wasn't really Hispanic. His pops was white, but his mom was Hispanic. So they got to live in this neighborhood with these houses and whatnot. So anyway, so this dude had like all the DJ equipment, like this Greek guy. His name was Nick. Typically, right? His name was Nick. And so he was trying to teach me how to deep, man. He had a fog machine in his garage. Like, we filmed it. The Tribe Called Quest, a Busta Rhymes.
Right.
What's the scenario?
So you have this.
So I was trying to mix that. It's on film. It exists somewhere with me, like, coming up from the floor with the fog, 14, and rhyming to What's the Scenario.
All right.
So, and then I jump back there and I start DJing and everything.
I like to see that.
No, I pray it never comes to light. I pray it never comes to light. Anyway, so this week we're going to continue on along the same vein of last week because of Columbus Day. I said, we're not going to necessarily always just bash it, but I'm going to take it as an opportunity to educate, kind of like what they've done with Indigenous Peoples Day. Let's bring awareness to our people. And so I was talking about Columbus and the Jews, right, and how he understood and knew that Hebrews were here, biblically, different things like that. So now we're going to flash forward to today, right, more modern times. And we're going to talk about Hebrews in the Caribbean, right? And obviously, really, that implies this whole side of the world. But specifically in the Caribbean, because what we're going to talk about today that I didn't get to speak about last week was a little over 2 years ago, we went to Puerto Rico. I even forgot you were there.
I even got the soccer haircut and everything.
I know.
Specifically for the trip.
So, no, like when you had said it last week, I was like, oh, snap, he was there. You know what? Because the one that's more recent in my head is DR, and you weren't there for that. So, for Puerto Rico.
No, it's okay.
And one of the things and one of the things we did while we were there, well, we drove to, I think it was
was maybe like a couple hours, Utuado, and there's a university there. And we met with a professor of archaeology who had some ancient stones that he had discovered when he went to that university that they had discovered there during some excavations and stuff that's not too far from the school. I don't remember exactly the details, but I think he said, like, the university itself, like, there's an archaeological site, like, right behind it, and they do a lot of excavating and things there. And we'll read about it in the article. So he has these Hebrew stones, and they were little stones, and, you know, some of them were shaped like they had, like, faces and images. Most of them had this writing on it. And basically the history is these stones, he had believed them to be, like, Aramaic or Hebrew writing. And when we were there, he was talking about how, by and large, in his circles, he used the term dogmatic. He said, you know, people in my profession, people in science, they tend to be very dogmatic. Dogmatic, you know, is usually applied to religious people where we just don't want to see anything else. And he didn't want to officially at that point go on record and say that it was Hebrew writing and it was Hebrew stones, but he had mentioned that he was having a hard time in the community because, you know, there's reputations, academia, and all that stuff like that and how they do things. And not many people were willing to support the theory or the notion that they were Hebrew writing. Nobody wanted to come out and confirm or validate that. So we're going to read a little bit about that today and talk about, you know, how we went there. And, you know, they termed this pre-Columbian, right, because, you know, we tend to not realize that most of the history that's told about our people starts with Columbus's arrival. And prior to that, they didn't really go into us and where we were, where we came from, and all that stuff. They got the land bridge theory, and that we came from Asia. And but other than that, there's not really a lot of discussion about the origins. Right? It was just kind of like, okay, they were here, and we think they came from Asia, and that's it. Obviously, we don't see that. The case, and these stones go a long way in validating stuff like that. Now, is it going to catch fire and the whole world's going to acknowledge it? No, we know the whole world's not going to acknowledge it until Christ returns and the sky cracks and all those angels, right? Nor do we need their validation, right? Because the Bible wouldn't be a true book without the case. So we have to be scoffed at, we have to be spoken of in that way. But I'm going to go ahead, and I got to get logged into the Facebook here and post these links and stuff like that. But if you want to talk, hey, one thing being on the show, sit there wide-eyed, I mean, like, you're looking at it now. All right? I mean, don't be rude, but find your way. You want to bring out, get out. You want to make a comment, all right? So you got a line on it, so be a line, all right? All right.
First, let me get 2 Ezra 13, verse 4, real quick. Just to make a point real fast about the whole Bering Straits theory, because I think it's BS. And then I'm going to put a little bit of comments in with it as well. All right. 2 Ezra 13, verse 2. The book of 2 Ezra, chapter 13, verse 40. Those are the 10 tribes which were carried away prisoners out of their own land in the time of Hosea the king, whom Salmaneser, king of Syria, led away captive. And he carried them over the water, and so came they into another land.
2 Ezra 13:40-45 is one of the pivotal chapters in the Bible that explains how the so-called Hispanic natives got to this side of the earth.
Right.
It destroys the whole Bering theory. Listen, the Bering theory destroys the Bering theory simply by quoting theory.
Right.
But it's the poor people away from the standard that they But this time, the two tribes took a council among themselves, so they left that side of the earth to come to this side of the earth. Jump to verse 45.
Verse 45.
For those that country, there are great ways to go. So now they entered Euphrates. Fast forward time's sake. But they came Euphrates. And then they went to the ocean. They sailed around the land that we know in Africa. and then they came from the bottom part of Africa
onto this side of the earth.
It says, for the name, namely, that country, there was a great way to go because it's a great distance.
Namely, here and here. And the same region is called Arthur.
So a year and a half, come out of the Euphrates, down the ocean, start landing in what we know today as South America, Central America, and North America.
The whole parents
Strait,
there's
BS
because
that means that they walked over ice capsule, started walking along North America, and then decided,
you know what,
let's just
build boats
and
sell
to what we know as Cuba and Puerto Rico
and DR.
That makes some sense.
They came over
on
boats,
and then they started knocking
lands
that
they saw,
and they took them for their
inheritance.
It's common sense.
It's no very
beyond
me off.
But give me Psalms 82
and verse 5.
Psalms 82
verse 5.
Because the professor
in DR,
he used
the term wrong,
right?
He said that
people need to want to
fashion things
they want to
see,
and
that goes for us.
All
aspects
of
life. Why?
Psalm 82, verse 5.
The book of Psalms, chapter 82, verse 5. They know not, neither will they understand. They walk on in darkness.
So this is talking about the Israelites, all right? It says that we go on, neither will we understand. We walk in darkness, meaning that everything that we take as truth has been flipped upside down, and we walk in darkness because we are now walking under the presence of being blacks, Hispanics, and Native Americans versus being the 12 tribes of Israel. But read on.
All the foundations of the earth are out of course.
Everything is out of course. Every single thing. So something like Hebrew writing on tablets that are found in the landmass that we know as Puerto Rico, that's going to start resetting things back into the earth the way they're supposed to be. That's why it could be so obvious that they are exactly what they seem to be in their tablets with Hebrew writings, but they won't come out and say it because it's going to start the beginning of the process of this kingdom falling and God's kingdom on the rise. Everything's been set out of course, every single thing. You got something?
Not at the moment.
Not at the moment? Okay, we're reading from the top.
Psalms 82, verse 5.
I thought maybe that would spark a little something in you, but okay, let's go. Let's go.
They know not, neither will they understand. They walk on in darkness. All the foundations of the earth are out of course.
We have to understand that. Now, the base of the other nations, right, like the typical, you know, trailer park trash Caucasians, they don't understand that the 12 tribes of Israel are indeed the natives, Hispanics, and blacks today. They don't know those things. But the upper echelon of these nations and these heathen, they know exactly who we are. And they're the ones that spend trillions of dollars to keep this thing hidden.
Yeah, and there's a point in the article where you read, I forgot the term that they use when we get to there, that it's talking about that upper echelon and how they really didn't want to get on board with what's coming out here.
Right, and this professor, I mean, even on like low levels of things, when people kick against the pricks and then they try to go against the government or try to expose any kind of truth, then they get framed for being whatever the case may be. Whatever Esau wants to label you as, that's what the media takes it, and then they run with it. And they destroy careers, they destroy families, all these things. So this professor has to be very, very very discreet in how he brings forth this information, knowing that this man is capable of destroying his entire reputation and career behind simply saying, hey, look, this is Hebrew writing on these tablets. It's clearly Hebrew writing, and then it could be linked up with all the Hebrew writing that was found. There was some found in New Mexico, right? New Mexico, Ohio. All right, North America is littered with these same exact things, but no one's going to come out and say, oh, yeah, that's Hebrew writing. Because it's going to start to make the foundations of the earth be reset once again. It's not the devil.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm trying to log in here. I forgot that we had a new login, so
okay.
I didn't have it all saved.
No worries. What's that one in Ecclesiastes where it says that the people there is no end? Of the people there is no end. In Ecclesiastes, real quick, let me get it. Ecclesiastes. Let me see. Ashai, you know it?
Yes,
416. Yes, Ecclesiastes 4:16. Because Captain Joshua mentioned earlier that people ignorantly think that our history starts with Columbus and the conquistadors and everything else. But then you go ask a Arab, hey, who's your forefather? They'll openly tell you, my forefather is Ishmael. And Ishmael is back from the book of Genesis, the first book of the Bible. So how is it that this people was able to trace their lineage back so far, but ours starts the history that our oppressor gave us? Read.
The book of Ecclesiastes, chapter 4, verse 16. And moreover, I saw under the sun the place.
4, verse 16.
Oh, excuse me. Ecclesiastes, chapter 4, verse 16. There is no end of all the people, even of all that have been before them.
So there is no end of all the people, meaning the same people that the Lord created back in Genesis when he created the different nations and he chose Israel to be his chosen people. The Bible says of that people there is no end, meaning that they're still here today. But who are they today? Because even Arabs aren't calling themselves Ishmael, right?
Right.
Chinese aren't calling themselves Ammon. Aren't calling themselves Moab. No one's using their biblical titles anymore, but the people are still around today. But then when it comes to our people, oh no, because we can't trace our history because it was destroyed and then we were retaught who we were versus what the Bible says who we are. And that's the 12 tribes of Israel. It's very, 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 very simple. The scripture says that as long as there's a heavens and the earth and the operations thereof and there's a sun and a moon, then guess what? Israel is still a people today. And the way that we know that is going by this Bible, reading these curses to identify who these people actually are. You got something, Cap?
No. I was just looking for some stuff later on. All right, I got all this stuff kind of locked in here. So let me jump into this article. Let me see which one I want to start with. I have two. Hold on. We can do that like once we let me know like you know, you got to cue us up and what the actual little clip is going into. All right, so let me try. Maybe I want to do this one. All right, let me start with this one first, and then I'll jump to the other one. So this is from the Miami Herald, and it says, dismissed as fakes for a century, enigmatic Puerto Rican stones could rewrite history. This is what you were talking about earlier. Like, they won't really do this and say that stuff because they'll find a way to, like, you know, keep it down. Like, that's what the Bible prophesizes, right? It's not going to be some mass acknowledgement that we are the Hebrews in this last day. You know, this is why it tells you what it says in Wisdom of Solomon 5, right? Like, in that day, when they see Christ and all the angels, that's when they're going to say, how are these numbered among the saints, right? They're going to say, these are them which we sometimes had in derision. So, yeah, but, you know, sometimes you'll see some videos out there, and you'll see some Edomites, and be like, oh, yeah, they are this or they are that. Those are just, like, freaky white people that want to get, right, you know, they want to, like, lick your toes and different things like that.
If anything,
because they'll say that, like, hey, I'll kiss your feet.
You just got a fetish.
If anything, those Edomites piss me off more than the ones that actually hate me.
Right.
I'm like, yo, like, who are you to declare our statue? Like, bro, like, just go enjoy your kingdom. That's it.
So let me jump into this to give a little context. So it says, for more than a century, the fist-sized rocks etched with enigmatic patterns were ignored by academics and shunned by cultural power brokers. This is the part that we were talking about, that elite, that upper echelon. Those are cultural power brokers. They were shunned, meaning they know, but they're not going to put anything there, like, to validate, you know? So it's like when people say that King James was gay, like, that's one of the things. We go, oh, King James was gay, so you can't trust the King James Bible. Then why did he leave laws against homosexuality in the Bible? If you were gay and you wanted to be gay, you would take that stuff out of the translation of the scriptures, right? You would mold it to what you wanted it to be. But clearly that's in there, and the Bible speaks out against something like that. So it says it was ignored by academics and shunned by cultural power brokers. So you guys didn't happen to find that part of the clip, right, where he says that, where they're very dogmatic. Right, like, that was a long interview. So I don't know if there's a part there in that clip where he talks about from his own mouth that it's basically hard for people to – he uses the term dogmatic and says, like, most academics won't help him acknowledge what the writing is. All right. Yeah, if you can find it, I'd like to pull it up. So it says, discovered in Puerto Rico in the 1880s by a priest who was convinced they were linked to one of the lost tribes in Israel. Right? So there's this priest that saw them, and he said, this is proof, archaeological proof, that Israelites were here. The stones were declared forgeries in the early 1900s by researchers from the Smithsonian Institution. So this goes back to those academics and cultural power blocks. Because when it says shush, shush doesn't mean ignored, right? It means that they actually took an active action in trying to block something like this. Same thing like with the, what are the ones? Las Lunas, the Tecalac stones. I think Glenn Beck did something. There's other parts of the country where there were some other stones that he found, like black stones or something like that.
Yeah, that was in
Right. So it talks about all that. So it says, hold on a second, I want to pull something up here. Let me see if I can pull this up. Okay. I want to pull up the definition of shunsh. You understand that it doesn't just mean persistently avoid, ignore, or reject through antipathy or caution. So it says, and it's some similarity, it says keep away from, have nothing to do with, ignore, turn one's back on, reject, rebuff, dismiss. So meaning they did things to try to make sure that these things were last in language. It was just at least over 44 years. He told us this story. We already heard it from him. And he said, language literally collect dust. When Puerto Rican archaeologist Inel Rodriguez Ramos first stumbled onto the collection in 2001, the artifacts were so unappreciated that one was being used as a doorstop.
Damn.
He said these stones were considered garbage. They were getting no love from any institution, or even any archaeologist. But he told us, it was a really cool guy. I think it was a nice interview. Those will we'll go back soon. I wouldn't mind to my face with him now. Now that he hears this article, he's undergoing a reevaluation. Not only is there evidence that genuine antiquities, there are also clues that they might represent a lost language, a finding they write the island in Colombian history. Standing in his crab lab at Puerto Rico, Rodriguez was one of the stones under a magnifying glass, describes the figure he chooses with his surface. It seems to be the point of old man wearing some kind of kids herbs hermit,
right?
So we know that the Levi's, right? And then some kind of surface, right? Metri, so that's what they say. They say a turban. Lines curving around the surface, possible small symbols. Rodriguez identified about 77% of claws and 300 stones he studied. Initially, the angle of the sloping line is the astronomical information of the cosmos. It's a system of adaptation, not a racial meaning. Wait a second. These people are the Hebrews. They are the lost tribes of Israel, right? So Puerto Rico's original inhabitants left the English language, colorful array of words, including Cayman, barbecue, papaya, and hurricane. Judith, barbecue was there.
Carved stones.
So there's a lot of these things all over the place. We asked the question about how come there's no pyramids there or whatever.
They were saying when they were there.
I don't know if it was true or false or not. They were saying that there was something they had there, and they were trying to hide it, so on and so forth.
And the significance of the pyramids, right?
And I want to be clear on that because some people sometimes leave you left with that, and they talk about mystical powers and all this other stuff like that.
The significance of the pyramids is that.
That understanding to do that, right? They tell you pyramids were an ancient wonder of the ancient world, right?
That was something our people built, right?
Historians will try to tell you, well, there were other people in captivity in Egypt that built this. By and large, it was Egypt, right? The scriptures tell you, you became greater and more numbered than those. So they put us into captivity, and we built. Why is that significant? Is that not everywhere? If pyramids were that simple to build, you would find them all over the world.
Right.
And you don't. You find them largely in Central South America. They said that there were some here in the Americas, but people kind of destroyed them. And you might have similar type of structure. They might not be the grandiose pyramids that ancient Egypt had, but you might have similar type of structures. And then they talk about how the alignment with the constellations and everything were very similar to what you saw in Egypt. And that makes a lot of sense, understanding that the Most High gave like Issachar chiefly understanding of stars and navigation and things like that, right?
So, in absence of that,
the other thing they look for is karst-type tones, carved stones, things like that, right? So it says the island is scattered with these type of stones. The Father and Nazario stones could change that. If the larger scientific community agrees with Rodriguez that they're real. So you see how they got to work? They worked on consensus, right? And this is the issue that he was saying he was having problems with when we went to interview him. The story of why the stones have been written off as fakes goes back to the early 1900s, and a man named Jesse Walter Fuchs, and he was speaking to us about that. I remember now when he says Fuchs, I remember him saying that Fuchs. Born in Massachusetts in 1850, Fuchs was a Harvard-trained zoologist who developed a love for archaeology and anthropology. After the United States annexed Puerto Rico from the Spanish in 1898, is there somebody else that's supposed to be coming in right now? Are they already coming in? Because I heard the door. I just want to make sure nobody's... The story of why the stones have been written off as fakes goes back to the early 1900s, and a man named Jesse Walter Fuchs, born in Massachusetts in 1850, Fuchs was a Harvard-trained zoologist who developed a love for archaeology and anthropology. After the United States annexed Puerto Rico from the Spanish in 1898, the Bureau of American Ethnology commissioned Fuchs to study this new American acquisition. He started traveling the island in 1902, branching out to Haiti, Cuba, and Trinidad, as he tried to understand the Arawakan cultures that lived there before Columbus' arrival in 1492. So you had Arawaks and Caribs in the Caribbean, right? Caribs would be what eventually, what you would call today Jamaicans. Okay, those are Caribs or people from like St. Lucia or whatever. So Benjamin, right? And the Arawaks would be like Ephraim, Manasseh, Simeon, that's in those regions, right? And we understand that Levi came much later with the French. So it says he started traveling the island in 1902, branching out to these places. And he wanted to understand these things, right? So I don't know if you're – I know you were looking for the video. I don't know if you're putting up any of this article. Okay, because there's a nice picture here of the stones. We got to see these in person and handle them a little bit. It says, in one of those expeditions, Fuchs met Jose Maria Nazario, a priest and amateur archaeologist from Guayanilla on Puerto Rico's southern coast. Nazario had collected about 800 of the enigmatical stones from the mountains of western Puerto Rico. So there was 800 of these stones.
That's crazy.
In the mountains of western Puerto Rico. And that was him as an amateur excavating these things. So there's definitely much more there if you could get some professionals and stuff to come in there and do that, right? So he says, and Fuchs tried to buy them for the National Museum. So this guy Fuchs, he actually tried to buy them. His offer was rebuffed, but six stones ended up at the Smithsonian Institution and are now stored in the fake collection. So, again, there's little undertones here. His efforts were rebuffed to buy them. Remember when we spoke about cultural power brokers and shunning things?
Right. His efforts were refuted.
Right. He was basically trying to grab these things and hide them like they did everything else.
Yep.
Right? So just like they did our history, just like they did anything archaeologically, they try to – with iconoclasm. and, you know, breaking those images. It tells you that, and get that in Maccabees where they sought to paint their likeness so that you understand this is a characteristic of them. He tried to buy all these stones, and then the six that he somehow managed to get, which means he stole them.
Right.
Right. They put them in the fake collection in the Smithsonian Museum. You got that?
Yeah, this is 1 Maccabees 3, verse 48.
Uh-huh.
And laid open the book of the law.
Talking about the Bible, right? Come on.
Wherein the heathen had sought to paint the likeness of their images.
Heathen is the other nations outside of Israel. So it's letting you know that the opposite of Israel, right? Meaning they look different, they were different. They sought to paint the likeness of their images into our book. And that was an attempt at iconoclasm to break down those images. It's the same type of thing that you're seeing here when it says that these things ended up in the fake collection. When it says it was shunned by cultural power brokers in the beginning, they said, oh, this can't come out.
Yo, right. Just that language, cultural power brokers.
Mm-hmm.
The average person reading that, that's going to go completely over their head.
Right.
That's why, I mean, but we know it to be the power.
You
got to
read between the lines.
Exactly.
Like, you know, how it says this amateur guy found 800, but, you know, and that was an amateur that was able to, means that there's plenty. There's plenty there. So why haven't these things been explored? We know why, right? We know why.
Hey, Cap, can I bring up a real quick?
Go ahead.
Give me Isaiah 11, verse 13, real quick. Because we know that, listen, the spirit that's within all these nations were given to them by the Most High to fulfill his will in all things, all right? So we know that Esau is going to do what he can to maintain his kingdom. But real quick, I want to make a point real fast. Isaiah 11, verse 13.
The book of Isaiah, chapter 11, verse 13. The envy also of Ephraim shall depart, and the adversaries of Judah shall be cut off. Ephraim shall not envy Judah, and Judah shall not vex Ephraim.
So with these stones being found in Puerto Rico in masses with Hebrew writing, it proves two things. One, that Bering Strait theory is BS, right? It proves that 2 Ezra 13, verse 40 is indeed how the 10 tribes got to this side of the earth. But number two, it proves what? That the 12 tribes chart is an actual chart. That the Hispanics,
right,
natives are the Israelites the Bible speaks of. And that's why I want this scripture, Judah shall not vex Ephraim, because we got a lot of people out there saying that the 10 tribes never left Africa. Hispanics are not the Israelites. This actually validates the
Bible.
There's
too much evidence for that, man. You're just trying to be blind to that
stuff.
Listen,
just stop vexing Ephraim, all right?
That's it. So it says he tried to put these in the fake collection, right? So it says, Padre Nazario considers that these hieroglyphs belong to the ancient writing possessed by the prehistoric Puerto Ricans. A label for one of the stones at the Smithsonian reads, in Nazario's collection, there are several bureaus full of stone objects inscribed like this. He also has a stone slab covered with these figures, believed by Dr. Fuchs to be a fraud, right? So you got to connect the dots here in this article.
Right.
Fuchs wanted to buy these things. And he was rebuffed, right? This meaning that he told them, no, there is no amount of money that you can give me to get these stones.
He was refuted.
Yes, he was refuted. Fuchs was refuted. So now Fuchs is running around saying that these are frauds. So he started to put the story out there that this guy started carving these things himself or whatever, which their dating methods and whatever proved that wasn't the case. The weathering and everything doesn't validate that.
Bro, it is. Even like nowadays, in its most carnal form too, it's if you try to get at a girl when you're younger and then she didn't want nothing to do with you, so you told everyone that she was a hoe.
Right, right. Hey, but check it out. It's funny you said it because the next statement, it says, Fuchs' judgment, powerful and definitive. The guy had clout. This was the guy that they sent after they stole Puerto Rico, right? Because it says they annexed it after they stole it, all right? This is the guy that they sent down there. And I'm not talking about that long ago. This is in the early 1900s that he went to explore these things, right? So it says that Fuchs' powerful judgment shut down further research into the stones. Mm. This is that shunning. This is that consultation against the hidden ones, right? We spoke about crafty counsel. I did that on the show. I spoke about it a few weeks back in class. Crafty counsel has a lot of – like there's a lot within that term.
Right.
There's like encyclopedias of how you subjugate and destroy our culture to the point that we have confusion of faces and we believe we're something else. And, you know, you even have us infighting amongst ourselves, right? Because they understand a house divided cannot stand. And they even get, right, that's why Psalms 2, it says, why did a heathen rage and the people imagine a vain thing?
That's right.
The heathen being those other nations that sought to paint their likeness, right? And then the people being the Israelites that actually go with this. So like you said, a lot of southern kingdom vexing northern kingdom and saying that it's not the case. So this Fuchs guy, he's part of those cultural power brokers. He, remember, he went down there. They said he was passionate about this stuff. He said, hey, we want to know about these port. Why?
Right,
why
right.
did they want to know? Why would they spend? Why would they do this diligent search? Right? Because we know that the scripture tells you that. Let's get that real quick.
Hey, maybe I missed it, but did it say exactly how they knew that there were stones even found in Puerto Rico?
You know what? I'm gonna go back and take a look at it real quick.
Because if it doesn't, that's because that they already knew.
Psalm 64:6. Get that real quick. You were gonna say something?
Early in the article, it says that. They were forgery, but for anything to be forged, it has to be copied off of something else.
Right. You can't just make it up. So all of a sudden, it like means something. Exactly. Hey, so what it says is, after it was annexed in 1898, the Bureau of American Ethnology commissioned Fuchs to study this new American acquisition. Doesn't say why they got into it.
We know why. We know why.
So... So this priest was running around basically talking about this stuff, and an ear came to them in 1902, and that's when they went down, and he started exploring. Remember, he didn't just go to Puerto Rico. It says he went to Haiti. He went to Cuba. He went to Trinidad.
This is years before we woke up, and then they were
like, my hands are standing up now when I think about this stuff.
This is years before we woke up as a people, and they were already trying to get ahead of it. Like,
He said, yeah, because they knew that by Puerto Rico coming into the mainstream of America's influence, that they were like, wait a second, this stuff might come out.
Yep.
Right? Because they could create whatever narrative they want with third world countries, right? We're in a bubble with news and media and everything like that. I mean, they're able to do that today, and media and information flows so freely. How much easier then, you know?
Yep.
So, and it says that they wanted to understand the Arawakan cultures that lived there before Columbus. Why?
Right.
Why in 1902 did you want to understand these people prior to 1492?
They said, oh no, they got stones. Quick.
And let me tell you something. That's the big thing. Nobody asked the why. They're just like, oh, they just sent somebody over there.
I said, hey, listen.
Why? Why would the American government send somebody over there to try to understand this stuff?
They said, hey, listen, they got stones.
They got stones.
Let's give them domino sugar.
Let's give them domino sugar. Right. I've gone over that on the show.
And completely destroyed.
I got to tell you, you can't sleep on Puerto Rico, man. Like, you know, it's kind of just thrown as like an offshoot and stuff like that. And I'm going to tell you something. Looking at it in the spirit, I'm going to tell you why they were so adamant to go to Puerto Rico. I'm gonna tell you, it's not here. This is me saying this based on my understanding with the scriptures. They know that Ephraim was the head tribe of the northern kingdom.
I was gonna say that right now.
Sure, was Mexico bigger? Is Colombia and all these other places bigger and have more resources other than the, you know, sugar, fruit, and whatever that Puerto Rico had? Sure. But they said, we need to go here because they knew this is the Ephraim. These are the descendants of the tribe of Ephraim.
Right.
And we need to see what's going on over here.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why they went over there. So it says, Fuchs' judgment, powerful and definitive, shut down further research into the stones. And in academic circles, the prevailing theory was that Puerto Rican locals in the late 1800s had made the fake antiques to dupe the Spanish priests. But like what you brought out, see, this is why you can't be quiet on the show. That was actually a really good point. If it was a fake, they had to fake it off of something because it wasn't like it was a made-up language.
Right.
It's skewing and leaning towards, and we're going to get to it, that they're identifying it as Hebrew and Aramaic.
Right.
I actually have the definition for forgery.
Go ahead. Bring it out.
Forgery. The action of forging or producing a copy of a document, signature, banknote, or work of art.
Right. So it's a copy. Means they didn't fabricate it. So if they are forgeries, then where did they get that ancient language from? Where did they get this stuff?
Hey, does that make you proud?
It does.
He brought out a definition.
Judah. See, he's like, you know why? When you brought that scripture out, he said, let me not vex my brothers.
Right.
He said, let me get in the spirit here.
All praise.
Right. So it says, Rodriguez said the rocks were never even mentioned when he was an archaeology student. So this is back to the professor. He said they when he was a student, they never even spoke about this. And he was a student in Puerto Rico. And while local naturalists and historians have written about the artifacts, there has not been a single page written by an archaeologist about these stones. And they've been around for 140 years.
That's crazy.
Talk about a conspiracy right there.
Bro, how do you go to school to be an archaeologist in Puerto Rico and there's nothing?
And one of the biggest things, one of the biggest finds ever,
right?
Whether they were forgeries or not, you'd think that stuff would come to light, right?
Right. That's crazy.
So it says the dark cloud left by Fuchs persists. So this guy, I'm telling you, this guy wasn't some light dude, some flyby. Not this. This was, and then you know he had the Bureau of Ethnology behind him, right? And you know I want to look that up a little bit and see what's the deal with this Bureau of Ethnology.
He wasn't just some flyby white guy.
He wasn't some flyby night white guy, exactly. When Rodriguez started to seriously study the stones again in 2011, his friends warned him he was committing academic suicide. He told us this too. Mm-hmm. And this is the part that he was saying, like what you were bringing out, that he has to be careful because he has his career and everything like that. But he has his. Now, this guy's not a repenting Israelite, none of that stuff. But he does feel and acknowledge that there's a connection that the pre-Columbian, the Arawaks, they listen, if these stones are showing that it's Hebrew writings, then that means how did they get here? Mm-hmm. How did they get here? Well, we know how. So what you brought out in the beginning, Second Ezra 13:40-47, right? So it says Rodriguez pushed ahead anyway. My aspiration is not to teach at Harvard. I'm here in Utuado, and that's all I care about. So he said, look, just to show you how they roll, because you would think like they're not going to get fame or riches. And academia is not about fame. It's not about riches, but it is about making your mark.
Right.
And when you get to these prestigious institutions and you, I'm a professor from here, professor emeritus and all this other stuff, and you got these accolades that they give you, you're memorialized in history of academia. And he said, listen, that's not my goal. He says, I have a love and a passion for this, and I'm here in Puerto Rico, and this is where I want to be. So he says the decades of neglect had also taken their toll on the stones. Of the 800 that were originally in Nazario's possession, only about 330 remain. Most are in Puerto Rico, including at an archaeology museum in Guayanilla. We got to go check those out next time we go. Make a note of that. I didn't realize that they were in another part, because he has those that he actually was able. It's not going to get better than him actually having those in hand and letting us look at that, right? But some are at Harvard's Peabody Museum, where they're also in the fake collection, and others are at the Quai Branly Museum in Paris. So they shunned them. They said they're fakes. But these prestigious universities and museums tried to bring them over to say that they're fakes. So when Rodriguez approached a fellow researcher, Christopher Rolston, about the stones, Rolston was fully aware of their reputation. A professor of Hebrew, Phoenician, and Aramaic at George Washington University, Rolston has made a career out of spotting forged antiquities. I've debunked a lot of scriptural forgeries over the past couple of decades. And notice he says scriptural. The Bible is not really even mentioned here.
That's right.
Just what he said, lost tribes of Israel in the beginning and here. So they know when you start talking about these things, what you're talking about is the real identity of the Israelites today. And we know it's not those people that are in Israel today.
Right.
So he says, and a lot of people believe these were modern forgeries from the late 1800s. Rolston traveled to Puerto Rico earlier this year to study the stones. In the diagonal lines that Rodriguez first interpreted as astronomical angles, or perhaps representations of mummy-like wrappings, Rolston saw register lines, like the lines of a ruled sheet of paper. And below and above those lines were a series of symbols that repeated across those stones. So he's saying it basically was a notebook on a stone, right? Hold on, let me do this tonight. Okay, so it says, while Rodriguez has identified about 20 separate symbols, Rolston said there aren't enough to think of it as an alphabet or even a complex non-alphabetic writing system. My sense is that these symbols are not Mesoamerican writing. They're not Aztec or Mayan. They're definitely not that. He said, and yet I don't believe they are forgeries from the late 1800s either. These seem to represent a fledgling writing system that is different than the writing systems that we know. In his report, Rolston points that those attempting to write upon the stone perhaps knew about or had seen written language, but for some reason they did not attempt to replicate the signs or the symbols of that writing system. Now, here I want to bring out a scripture here. Hold on.
Bring it out.
Okay, so let's go to Hosea. All right, I want Hosea.
The anticipation was killing me.
And okay, I'm gonna do it this way. I'm not gonna go to that one first. Let's start at verse 4, right? I'm going to jump real quick for the sake of time as I go through this. So here he talks about, he says it was a fledgling writing system, meaning they were familiar with this as far as language, but it wasn't fully there. You got to remember, when you're talking about pre-Columbian, that can mean all the way back from when they first got there.
That's right.
Up until recent, right? We understand historically that Northern Kingdom lost their mind over here, right? And not just historically, as far as what Esau puts out about sacrifices to sun gods and altars and heart, you know, you see Apocalypto and they were sacrificing people. But the book of Hosea tells you the tendencies of our people. So I just want to read a couple of things. If you'd understand that, it makes sense that it would be a rudimentary form right. of what the ancient Hebrew was, because they lost that as a punishment from the Most High for straying from his laws, right? So read verse 4 real quick. I'm going to jump around, all right? So bear with me, right?
You want chapter 3?
Hosea 8, and actually start at verse 3.
Hosea chapter 8 and verse 3. Israel hath cast off.
Actually, start at verse 1. I'm sorry.
Hosea chapter 8, verse 1. Set the trumpet to thy mouth. He shall come as an eagle against the house of the Lord, because they have transgressed my covenant and trespass against my law.
Meaning the Most High was going to send, and the house of the Lord is the Israelites, all right? So we're talking about the Spaniards came under the standard of the eagle, right? So he says, he shall come as an eagle against the house of the Lord because they transgressed my covenant and trespassed against my law. This is how we know why the conquistadors came and did all the destructive things that they did, right? Come on.
Israel shall cry unto me, my God, we know thee.
Right. And then he says they're going to remember when those afflictions happen, and that's when they're really going to seek me. Right. Come on.
Israel hath cast off the thing that is good. The enemy shall pursue him.
Right. So it's talking about the arrival of the conquistadors. The thing that is good is the laws, statutes, and commandments. Come on.
They have set up kings, but not by me.
So they started going off and setting up rulers and different things that would do things after their own lust. Right. Come on.
They have made princes, and I knew it not. Of their silver and their gold have they made them idols, that they may be cut off.
So, and we know that, right? What are the artifacts you find there, right? They talk about the silver, the gold, little idols up to the sun gods and different things like that, right? Jump to verse 8.
Verse 8. Israel is swallowed up. Now shall they be among the Gentiles as a vessel wherein is no pleasure.
And this is a precept for Acts 10 when it talks about how Peter saw the vessel come down with all manner of meat in there, right? So the vessel's dealing with Israel, right? And it's talking about, it says that they were a vessel. Why? Because he was trying to show them that it's okay to mingle with them now. John 4, the Samaritan woman by the well, where they mm-hmm. said they can't be by him, right? But he says Israel is swallowed up now, meaning what? They've lost their heritage. Just like Jeremiah 17 and 4 says, you will discontinue from your heritage. He says, and they shall be among the Gentiles, right? This goes with Hosea 7 and 8 and 9, right? Where it says he have mixed himself among the people. Mm-hmm. Strangers have devoured him. He says, and as a vessel wherein is no pleasure, meaning the afflictions and the problems. Jump to verse 11.
Verse 11. Because Ephraim hath made many altars to sin, altars shall be unto him to sin.
Come on.
I have written to him the great things of my law, but they were counted as a strange thing.
So they were counted. So he's saying they knew the law, but they were counted as a strange thing. They dealt differently. I have a bunch more here, but I want to get to this point. So let me get 4 and 6, right? Because this is ultimately what I want to get to, right? And if you read Hosea it, and you know the history of Northern Kingdom, and I'm talking about, like, you know, colloquially, meaning what's in the history books of how they were and what they wrote about us, it makes sense when you see this that this applies to us, because Judah wasn't doing this, right?
Right?
You know?
Right.
Levi was off in their own way, but it wasn't to this extreme, right? Come on.
Hosea chapter 4, verse 6. My people are destroyed for lack of knowledge.
Meaning, again, discontinuing from that heritage, the proper full understanding of the language and everything that they had, right? Come on.
Because thou hast rejected knowledge, I will also reject thee. that thou shalt be no priest to me, seeing thou hast forgotten the law of thy God. I will also forget thy children.
And then now 3, 4, and 5.
Hosea chapter 3, verse 4. For the children of Israel shall abide many days without a king, and without a prince, and without a sacrifice, and without an image, and without an ephod, and without teraphim.
So this is the point where it's talking about that all that, that language, that history, the law. He said, since you want to misuse it, even though you know it, I'm taking it all away from you. Right? Come on.
Afterward shall the children of Israel return.
What? After these afflictions, after these curses in these last days, come on.
And seek the Lord their God and David their king, and shall fear the Lord and his goodness in the latter days.
And that's what you're seeing now. This is where you hear, I'm an Ephraim. I'm an Israelite from the tribe of Ephraim, and I'm here acknowledging this, right? Christ is black. When it says David their king, it's through the seed of David, which is Christ, right? And we're bringing this to light. So it says here that for some reason they did not attempt to replicate the signs or symbols of the writing system. He says perhaps they knew about or had seen written language. What we just went over, right? I mean, there's a lot of context there, but the point of it is, of course they had and knew and seen written language because right. they're the Hebrews that the Bible speaks of,
right?
This is what it says, Hebrews in the Caribbean. But we know because of their transgressions, that stuff was taken away, right? It says, my people are destroyed for lack of knowledge and because they shunned it. And this is where we read in Hosea 3 and 4 that he says, this is why they will abide without a king, without a prince, without an image, an ephod, a teraphim, meaning all that stuff will be taken away from them, right? He says, and contrary to what Father Nazario believed, the symbols aren't Hebrew or physician brought to the new world by one of the lost tribes of Israel. So this article, he goes to try to say they're not, right? Despite enduring speculation that one of the so-called lost tribes might have made their way halfway around the world, Wilson said there's ample evidence in the Bible and from other sources that those tribes scattered after the fall of the northern kingdom of Israel, Samaria in 1722 BC, he said they never made it out of the ancient Near East. So this is where they try to skew it, right?
Yep.
So this guy, and this is why I wanted to start with this article versus the other one that I'm going to try to get through rather quickly, because these people want to say it's not Hebrew writing. And he's trying to say, I'm glad you brought that scripture. We let off the show with 2 Ezra 13 and 40. Mm-hmm. And it tells you that, yeah, they did make it to the West.
Right.
They never made it out the Near East.
You know what's heavy, like, about you bringing that out, about how they're trying to say it's not that writing because it doesn't, you know, it doesn't add up, it doesn't look the same, whatever. If you read a Shakespearean play, how he originally wrote it, mm-hmm. that's difficult to read today.
Right.
And that was only a couple hundred years ago.
Right, yeah, absolutely right.
It's the exact same thing. Over a course of time, they just lost it.
Right. So it's not straight articulate Hebrew, right? It's kind of like us with Ebonics.
Exactly.
Right.
No, right? That's exactly what it is.
Yeah, so there's dialect, right? So there's a grain of truth to what he's saying, but then they go out of their way to say, he said, we've known for about 150 years that the tribes of Israel weren't lost. We know entirely what happened to them. Read between the mother effing lines on that one.
Mother effing.
Because he's telling you they never made it out of the Near East, but he's letting all his cultural power brokers mm-hmm. know, like, hey, we know. We really know. Right. Yeah, we know what happened to them. They're here
right. In
the Americas, right? So he says, another key piece of evidence came from the University of Haifa in Israel. Using state-of-the-art microscopes, researchers determined that the weathering of the stones, subtle changes due to prolonged exposure to the elements, proves that they had been out in the open for years after they had been engraved. So they're not forgeries. That is, the stones weren't etched during the era that Father Nazario found them. All right. In addition, while Fuchs said the stones were carved with iron instruments, further proof that they were modern day forgeries and not Stone Age relics, the Israeli researchers cast doubt on that theory. If they had been made with metal instruments, the researchers expected to find microscopic traces of the metal in the grooves. They didn't. There's still a long road for the stones to take their proper place in history. Rodriguez is working on a paper encapsulating the new research, which will have to survive the peer review process. Mm-hmm. And what you have to understand here, first of all, now ask yourself, if they know what happened to them, then why are researchers in Israel looking at these stones?
Right.
Right. And it goes back to what I said prophetically. Don't get excited and think that there's going to be a definitive paper that says the Puerto Ricans, you know, Haitians, Cubans, whatever, are Israelites. That's not going to happen. And they're already laying the foundation here by telling you that.
Right.
They're going to say it's some, you know, mixed language, and I guarantee you they're going to leave something inconclusive about it so that you can't connect the dots.
Well, that's why the article said that, that his paper has to survive peer review, meaning that he's going to submit what he wants to submit, and then they're going to make changes
right.
to it.
And this next line tells you all that's what I'm saying. You got to look at things spiritually and read between the lines. He said, and even if he convinces the larger scientific community that the stones are real, which they're probably going to go that far to mm-hmm. say that they're real, what they represent remains a mystery.
Damn.
Why? Because they
there
want it,
it
to be.
Right? There it is.
Because they want it to be. He says there's a chance that at least the stones or at least their writing came from some other region or continent. It's a contentious theory. And why is it contentious? Because all the foundations of the earth are out of course,
mm-hmm.
and it would go against the grain of what the status quo is.
That's right.
Right. And it would make the Bible a history book and not some dogmatic spiritual thing that anybody can jump to.
Right.
Right. So there's some more here on this particular article. I'm not going to jump into too much of this. You know, it's, he says that he does go out the way to say that Columbus did bring writing and history with him, but these are important because it's pre-Columbus. And he says he acknowledges here, he goes, the stones question the meta-narrative that Columbus brought writing and history with him. So he says it questions that narrative, that we were brutes and everything. That's why they call everything before him prehistory. That type of thinking separates us from hundreds and thousands of years of our own history. It's not the same to tell a people you have 500 years of history as to tell them yours goes back 6,000 years.
Mm.
But I like this dude. I like that. He don't seem like he's into let me repent, keep the commandments, but that's okay. Not everybody is going to be, right?
Right?
And he serves a purpose, right? So, you know, he says the mayor in Guayanilla gave him the keys to the city and everything off of this discovery and whatever. So real quick, I wanted you, we don't have a lot of time left. I want to jump into this other article, and they bring a little more stuff out, right? And this was from August 27th.
Of this year.
Okay. So it says 800 ancient stones of Hebrew writing in Puerto Rico authenticated. A remnant of ancient stones, 20 of 800, made its way halfway across the world, solving a 3,500-year-old mystery. What did these stones whisper about the pre-Columbian indigenous people of the island of Puerto Rico? After rigorous academic testing, anthropologists, historians, academics, and millions of Puerto Ricans finally have scientific evidence that reveals the language of the stones. Growing up in the mountains of Borinquen, Puerto Rico, my grandfather told me about some very unique stones which are part of our ancient Taino Indian history. These rare stones were in the care of one of our greatest principal chiefs, Cacique Aguayabana, who, when Columbus stumbled across our Taino people in 1492, was the principal chief of my home island of Borinquen. Knowledge of these stones first came to light when a very sick Taino woman who had tried everything from indigenous herbal remedies to ceremonies lay on her deathbed. Compelled to tell a secret her family had carried for generations, she sent runners to find someone in the church who would listen. Why she chose the church, we'll never know. We know. But a monk named Jose Maria Nazario y Cancel came to her bedside. What this elder revealed to this monk changed the historical narrative of our precious island. There in her tiny bohio, the monk interceded for the old woman's healing. Then she told him her family secret, a secret that went back to the time of Cacique Aguayabana, the principal chief of Borinquen, the Taino Indian name for Puerto Rico, which means the house of the great and valiant Lord. That's what Borinquen means. Mm-hmm. So that's why when it says Boricua, it means the people of the great and valiant Lord. Her secret revealed where to find a hidden stash of stone figurines inscribed with strange symbols and carvings of an ancient people that some called the Jibaro.
Oh.
Jibaro is a term that we use. It means like hick, like it's the Hispanic version of a redneck, right?
Oh.
So we say, but it's become a derogatory term in modern times, but it was just basically, it meant like people that were from the country,
mm-hmm.
right? Not modernized. So Jibaro, who had lived in the mountains of the island and still have descendants who call themselves by this name to this day. Nazario had been educated at the University of Salamanca. His studies had included ancient languages, and he was amazed at what he saw. After comparing the writing on these stones to others from around the world, he came to his conclusion. The writing was a form of ancient Hebrew. Because of his religious background, this viewed the possibility that a remnant of the lost tribes of Israel had settled on this island. So you have to understand that Nazario wasn't just a priest. He studied ancient languages at university. So this guy that they were trying to debunk, now they're saying it's not Hebrew. And remember, there's vested interest in all of this to keep this stuff down. In 1893, Nazario wrote a short article titled Escritura Aborigen de Caribe, Aboriginal Writing of the Carib, in which he explained his interpretations of these carvings. After a thorough analysis of the stones and their inscriptions, he dismissed an Arawak Taino language origin. And by 1897, he concluded that the writings were more reminiscent of ancient Hebrew. Comparing this discovery with the spoken Taino language of his day, Nazario discerned words in the Taino Arawak language that were Semitic in origin and pronunciation. And what I like about this article, it doesn't give you this much depth about the priest.
Mm-hmm.
They just make you the modern iteration of this priest is that he was just some religious quack
right.
that found stones and wanted to make that connection. One example is the Taino name for the supreme spirit of spirits, Yaya. By comparison, the god of the monotheistic Hebrew culture is known by the abbreviated form of his sacred name, Yah. So in Taino language, the supreme spirit of spirits, meaning the god, right, the one true, the highest god, is called Yaya. And this goes back to what he was saying, that it wasn't that they made this language up, but rather it was a familiarity with language, and they did this. And when we brought on Hosea, so it became warped. They had the laws, but it became warped. And they brought it, and they tried to, and they misused it in by doing it to false idols and different things like that. Modern-day Taino people say that Cacique Aguaybayana kept his collection of inscribed stones, safeguarded on the island, and then buried them, fearing that the Spanish conquistadors might find them. They remained hidden in the earth. Why would he do that? Because he understood the prophecies. And when he saw the conquistadors, he realized the book of Hosea, because he was familiar with it, and he said, oh, snap, this is starting to happen. The eagle is coming against us,
right?
So Deuteronomy 28 as well. He said, fearing that the Spanish conquistadors might find them, they remained hidden in the earth for over 400 years until the dying Taino elder, Juana Morales, told Nazario about the stones and where to find them. It goes on. I'm trying to just sum it up. It talks about many scholars agree that it's not a forgery. Some even theorize that the writings predated the Mayan and Inca writing system. The Arta article told us that. In 2012, interest gained traction, and by 2019, it had peak global curiosity in the Middle East, meaning Israel.
Right.
New tests were done using spectrometry and X-ray diffraction in Israel. This fascinating story came to the attention of the Zinman Institute of Archaeology at the University of Haifa. This is in Israel. Dr. Iris Groman Yaroslavsky did molecular analysis on 20 of these stones. The doctor's results, based on the patina, revealed that these rocks were not forgeries. The results were verified by many scholars. This has added to mounting evidence about the origins of the writings. It says the stones are inscribed in a language script previously unknown to linguists with expertise in Phoenician and Proto-Hebrew. Expert linguists deciphered the writing to be a mixture. This is the part that the mainstream article doesn't tell you.
Mm-hmm.
A mixture of Hebrew with a little bit of Phoenician and an unknown script. And if you don't know, the Phoenicians were Israelites, all right? There's a history behind it. You look at it, the Phoenicians were Israelites. So it says it's a mixture of Hebrew, Phoenician, and an unknown script. And this is why it confuses modern scholars. You need somebody that's going to have a strong familiarity with this. It says the red paint found on the stones have been dated to 900 B.C., right? And when do we estimate? I think, what do we say? Is it 500? Something
around,
that they came over, more or less. That's
536,
yeah, that's the estimate that we say when Second Ezra 13:40 happened. So it would make sense, you know, that this stuff was there and brought over with them, right? As far as its datings. So it says that is time when King David's son Solomon sent out ships from Tarsus throughout the world to collect resources like bronze and gold. That some of those Hebrew sailors discovered this island during their travels. No, it's Second Ezra 13:40, and they migrated to this side of the world.
Right.
And will history be rewritten to include this fascinating new evidence? No, it won't.
Nope.
Not until Christ returns. Were the people who inscribed these ancient stones part of the scattered tribes of Israel as recorded in the Bible? Yes, they are. Did Hebrew share their language, traditions, and customs with the native island people? No, they didn't share it because they are them. Is that why several Native American tribes from the Southeast and the Caribbean islands share much of Israel's spirituality found in the Torah? No, it's because we're them. Mm-hmm. Only time and more testing will tell as this enigmatic hidden story of Borinquen unfolds. The state of Israel has acknowledged a Hebrew presence in our ancient mountains in times long past, and we, the good and noble people, the Taino, send our warmest regards and blessings to our long-lost cousins. So they've been a little extra. They're calling them long-lost cousins.
Right.
But
it's letting you know that there's been other times that scholars in Israel have acknowledged that the Hebrewness of the people on this side of the world. And then the last question here says, or are we the long lost ones? Yes. Yes, we are. Yeah. And there's a bunch of other stuff here. It's pretty good to go over. That's going to be the show for this week. All right. I'll leave y'all with that. And Lord's will, y'all get some understanding. All right. There's still a lot of mystery and awe in the world. The internet doesn't uncover all things for you. Right. You got to keep yourself in the Bible and understanding these things. All right. So that's the Power Hour, the Lost 144K. With that, we say shalom.
Shalom.